Hello and welcome to the Around the Nation podcast for the week of Monday, September 20th. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And this is where we talk about the Division III football season, the week that was in Week 3, the week that's coming up in Week 4. The week that's coming up in Week 4 is not to be trifled with. It might not be as quality as the week that's coming in Week 5, but Week 4 is looking pretty good. Week 3, Keith, we had three battles between top 25 teams, and although the higher-ranked teams won in each of those cases, I think they were still pretty interesting. We should start off the bat talking about Wesley and Delaware Valley.
Yeah, that was a game that Wesley outgained Delaware Valley by quite a bit, but was actually needed to put together a late drive to score and win that one. And we talked, a couple weeks ago, if you've been following the podcast, about Wesley not having their starting quarterback, Shane McSweeney. How would they respond? Would it take them a little time to get their confidence back and start to believe in this team again? And I think when you have Justin Sautelari, lead a 10-play, 66-yard drive late in the fourth quarter to give your team the winning score against a quality team like Delaware Valley, that's what starts to build that confidence and now can maybe propel Wesley forward for the rest of the season.
Wesley, obviously a lot of trouble hanging on to the football, but these have been games between Wesley and Delaware Valley that have been tight, even in a couple years ago, in which I think it would be fair to say that Delaware Valley was down a little bit. They still gave Wesley a big game, and it took a Larry Beavers return for a touchdown to open the second half to kind of put that game in a different direction. But do we learn anything about Delaware Valley out of this game?
Well, I think it tells you that result against Washington and Jefferson wasn't a fluke, that they're defensively, maybe one of the better teams on the East Coast. Not only did they shut out W&J, but they held Wesley to 21 points. And Wesley did a little bit of the damage to itself because they gained 407 yards, had 199 yards in penalties, 13 penalties on the day. And that's something, it's almost like a broken record. You start to hear it year after year at this time. Wesley needs to be disciplined. Needs to get itself together, and they usually get it figured out sometime heading into the playoffs. But I think for Delaware Valley, certainly this result, while it's a loss, it almost does as much for them to validate their position in the poll as a win would have. Certainly wasn't a blowout loss, and when they go, they have that 17-14 lead in the fourth quarter. That says that Delaware Valley was very much in this game and had a chance to win it.
Is it fair to say that that team discipline is one of the things that separates the top couple teams from the rest of the contenders nationally?
Yeah, and I don't know if you necessarily mean discipline in the sense of not getting in shoving matches or drawing personal fouls. That's discipline in one way, but also the thing that stands out to me when we talk about Mountain Union and Wisconsin Whitewater the past 5 years is that they very rarely have any lapses. And as we get down further in this podcast, Pat, we'll talk about a top 25 team that's coming off a big victory, and it's hard to stay focused after you feel like you've beaten maybe the best team on your schedule, and then you turn around and play a team that you don't take as seriously. Mountain Union and now Whitewater, they never take anybody lightly, or if they do, they're talented enough to figure it out at some point during the game and overcome it. But I mean, Mountain Union, they even say that. They say, hey, they treat every opponent with respect. They treat every week like they can really be beaten. And, from out here, from far away, we know pretty good chance they're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be 10-0 during the regular season. But if they can get themselves to believe that, that's a different kind of discipline than what you were mentioning necessarily in terms of Wesley having all those penalties. You have to also have this kind of discipline where every week you treat the game the same. You treat every game like it's the big Delaware Valley game, like it's the big Salisbury game. If you're Wesley, you have to play every game, and if you even want to break it down further, every down, every series, as though it's the most serious series of the season.
Let's talk a little bit. There are a couple of other ranked games, obviously, that we should talk about. But I think, obviously, one of the more intriguing games of the day on Saturday is the one that you kind of referenced there in talking about Wesley and Delaware Valley, and that is Cal Lutheran, coming off the big win at home against Linfield, and then going on the road up to Pac Lutheran and basically laying an egg, I guess, coming away with a 35-21 loss in a game they would be favored in.
Yeah, certainly were favored. And again, you know, coming off of the win over Linfield, that sort of made Cal Lutheran the big dog on the West Coast. And, you know, we only have about 16, 17 teams west of the Rockies. We may even have fewer now that we've lost Colorado College. But it's really just those two conferences there. And when Cal Lutheran, the champion of the SCIAC last year, beat the champion of Northwest Conference last year in week two, we figured, okay, Cal Lutheran's sort of in the driver's seat. You know, Occidental's off to a rough start back in Cal Lutheran's conference. And so they look like they're in good shape. But it's easy for us to sit here on a podcast and say that internally on the team, you can't get ahead of yourself. You can't get any past any game but the next week's game. You really can't get past anything but the next practice that you have, whatever you have to do that day to get better. And it's coach speak. It's completely and totally coach speak, but it is because it makes sense. You know, when you look at this, at the way this game started off, you know, Pacific Lutheran led 14-0 at the half. Kind of similar to last week where Cal Lutheran fell behind Linfield 28-7. And, you know, PLU actually was up 21-7 in this game. And then Cal Lutheran you thought, okay, maybe they're going to get it together and start pounding that running game like they did late against Linfield. And Pacific Lutheran just wasn't having any of it. Every time Cal Lutheran scored to make it a one-touchdown game, PLU came back and scored again. And certainly the shocker, I think, to this point in the season.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, Cal Lutheran has lost, obviously, some ranking. They've lost a chance to be a high seed in the playoffs. But, you know, aside from that, I'm not sure what they have lost. They still, if they continue on and win out and win the SCIAC Championship and get the automatic qualifier, I think they would still host the Northwest Conference champ in the first round in the playoffs, unless Pacific Lutheran were to run the table. If we're presuming that, you know, that a one-loss Willamette or a one-loss Linfield wins the Northwest Conference, they may still be making the trip to Southern California, and I would think if it were Linfield, because of the head-to-head result, they would definitely be the one traveling.
Yeah, but Pat, you mentioned now something that we hadn't particularly considered, was that, you know, maybe Pacific Lutheran is going to have a year like they had, maybe not quite to the level they had 11 years ago in 1999 when they were the national champions, but if they are to be taken seriously, that gives now the Northwest Conference, you know, definitely two teams that are serious threats to make the playoffs, maybe three if Whitworth gets it together. You know, they played some tough competition early, and it's kind of hard to tell what they're made of in Hardin-Simmons and Redlands, I believe, was their other game. But if Pacific Lutheran is a serious threat and not just the Midland team that they've been the past several years, that can make it very, very interesting. You know, we're going to have to take a few weeks and see if Pacific Lutheran is consistently good, or if Cal Lutheran just lost focus after that big win over Linfield and got a little bit ahead of themselves. You know, we don't quite know the answer to that at this point, but the results, you know, of September and October and the first couple of weeks of November will tell us sort of what we need to know about both of these Lutheran teams.
Looking back over at the games between the top 25 teams, we had, I think that, well, certainly they were results that were borne out by the poll. I think they were results that probably weren't too surprising necessarily either. But Hardin-Simmons, first of all, at home, handling Mississippi College pretty well. Number 9 Cowboys beating the number 19 Choctaws 45-10.
Yeah, and I personally had Hardin-Simmons ranked pretty high on my ballot just based on what they were bringing back from last year. You know, anytime you have a fifth-year quarterback and you have somebody, you know, as well-respected within a team as Xavius Robinson at wide receiver, the quarterback Justin Feaster. You know, we talked about a couple years ago and they had that real, real rough season defensively, and they put a lot of focus into last year, making their defense more respectable. And then you play the type of competition that they played. You feel like they're ready to get into the American Southwest schedule now because, you know, they've played, they started off with Whitworth and played another tough game last week. So now they get in here against Mississippi College, which doesn't have its longtime quarterback back. Lost Adam Schaefer and you know, lost some of the players from the team that won the conference last year. It was 9-2 and went up to Wesley and lost in the playoffs. But Mississippi College was the third team on our list too. They were sort of we were so used to putting Harden Simmons and Mary Harden Baylor right there in that top 25 at the beginning of the season, and certainly there's every reason to justify it this year based on what they were bringing back. But you had to take Mississippi College seriously up until this point. And Harden Simmons, really just total domination, scored the first 24 points of the game, was up 31-3 after Devin Carver took the second half kickoff back 88 yards. And it was pretty much all day, all Cowboys.
We can get back to the Ohio Northern Otterbein game in a minute, but let me ask, do you think that we need to take McMurray seriously after what they did to Mary Harden Baylor? I mean, obviously, they didn't beat Mary Harden Baylor, but they certainly threw the ball all over the yard on him.
Yeah, I mean, the split in that game was 5-12 for McMurray to 200 for Mary Harden Baylor in terms of total yards. And obviously, when you get outgained by 312 yards, very fortunate to win. And you know, McMurray, based on that Howl Mummy offense, they're going to put up the yards. They're going to put up points. And the question was, do we have to take them more seriously? I think a little bit of it is going to be taking McMurray more seriously, and a little bit of it is wondering how good Mary Harden Baylor is when you couple it with their result in the first week, which was also a victory. But also not that impressive. They went up to La Crosse, 124-19. Remember, they started from behind in that game, fell behind 19-0, I believe, and then came back in 124-19. At the time, we thought that was sort of impressive. But then you couple that with another win where they struggled, and they were on the road again. The great thing about the American Southwest, it's so front-loaded, this schedule. We won't have to wait long to figure out who's going to be the serious contenders. You know, we got Mary Harden Baylor and Harden Simmons meeting each other next week under the lights here in week four. So personally, I thought it made me wonder a little bit about how good Mary Harden Baylor might be. Will they be up to their typical, you know, top five, top 10 in the country level? That's where we have them in the poll right now. And we'll find out next week if they belong there.
Daryl Bailey took over as the starting quarterback this year, as he did last year, moving into the starting lineup in the middle of the season. This year, a little bit earlier, you know, he's the more athletic guy, but he was just 2 for 15 passing, threw an interception. You know, sometimes there are times when a team gets outgained by a bunch of yards, but it turns out they didn't have the ball for very long. That was not the case for Mary Harden Baylor. They had the ball for almost 29 minutes of the game. The offensive struggles have to be a little concerning after this week.
I mean, I would say certainly, and you know, it's nitpicking, I guess, in a sense, because they put up 43 points, and you say, well, they're struggling offensively, but not too many weeks where you're going to have 200 total yards on offense and be able to squeeze 43 points out of it. You know, Mary Harden Baylor. Always tough, and certainly fortunate to win. It's weird that we're talking about it as fortunate to win too, because they took a 22-0 lead, got off a hot start in the first quarter. Then McMurray stormed back and made it 22-19 at the half, and then it was sort of a neck and neck game from there on out. And you know, I don't know if what exactly was the factor in that game, because when you look at the box score, Mary Harden Baylor rushed for 249 yards. They actually had 240 yards of total offense, not 200 flat. I said 512 to 200. It was 512 to 240 during that game. You know, they also had issues with penalties, as we mentioned, with Wesley, Mary Harden Baylor, 11 for 163. But, you know, it's hard to believe that a defense as respected as the Crusaders' defense has been over the, you know, past 5 or 6 years to give up 512 yards to anybody.
And part of the way, of course, you get to 43 points while only accumulating 240 yards. Fumble recovery in the end zone, that was Mary Harden Baylor's first touchdown. They had a 32-yard interception return in the fourth quarter for a score, a 90-yard kickoff return late in the third quarter, and it added up to Mary Harden Baylor pulling away at the end and defeating McMurray by the score of 43-31. Our other game between top 25 teams, of course, was the aforementioned Ohio Northern Otterbein game. Ohio Northern had 16 days to prepare for this game after playing the first game of the Division III season back on Thursday, September 2nd. And Kyle Simmons came out hot. He completed his first 15 passes. You know, only completed six of his last 16, but at that point, the game was not in question. Eventually, it was a 34-10 win and puts Ohio Northern on pace for that presumed, although not always granted, second playoff bid out of the OAC.
Yeah, you know, that's sort of like a conference race all in itself, because you almost every year you chalk one up to Mount Union. It's been since the mid-90s since they've missed the playoffs. So, you know, it's safe to assume that they're a fairly solid, you know, as solid a lock as you ever have for an expected playoff bid. And then we always look at this race between who's it going to be, Capital, Ohio Northern. In recent years, you know, Otterbein has come up a little bit, but, you know, going back to 2003, it was Baldwin Wallace. You know, who's that second team going to be? Even before Baldwin Wallace, it was John Carroll. And so we're always watching that race. And I think this win by Ohio Northern, you know, 34-10, fairly convincing. Again, you know, there were a couple points in the game where Otterbein had cut it to a touchdown. You know, it was a 14-7, 17-10, you know, before the half. But Ohio Northern got it to 27-10 in the third quarter and 34-10 final. You know, that's pretty convincing final. And it looks like, you know, right now at the moment, based on, you know, what we saw Capital do this week, Capital actually lost. And then what we saw, John Carroll not put up much of a fight in a 51-7 loss to Mount Union. All of a sudden, you know, it looks like Ohio Northern is that very strong second team. And, you know, there's 10 teams in that conference, and certainly anybody could be the next team up. But as far as, you know, early season conference games go, this is probably as big as they get for the Polar Bears.
Next team up for Ohio Northern is Muskingum on Saturday. And Muskingum, of course, you know, one of the other teams, along with Baldwin Wallace, that is still undefeated in the conference and can still mathematically get itself into that position. Do you have to worry about Ohio Northern looking ahead to that game at Mount Union on October 2nd and overlooking Muskingum at home this weekend?
You know, I think that's one of those cases where the record benefits Ohio Northern a little bit, because with Muskingum being undefeated, you know, that's a team that traditionally they may not take very seriously, but Muskingum being 2-0, you know, the coaches will be able to harp on that and say, hey, these guys haven't been beaten. And, you know, you mess around and you don't take somebody seriously and you end up like Cal Lutheran was this weekend. You know, you have to be able as a team to focus on just the week at hand, and, you know, getting ahead of yourself with Mountain Union, especially when Mountain Union has a way of humbling teams. You know, you certainly don't want to do that. Think about this week's game. Think about the things that can go well for them this week. I don't think they should have too much trouble getting focused on Muskingum, even though the two victories are against Defiance and at Marietta.
Well, Keith, a lot of conferences are done with their non-conference play. Some of the smaller conferences, the Empire Six, for example, they still have some non-conference games to go. But you know, the 10-team, 9-team, even some of the 8-team conferences are going to be done with their non-conference action here for the 2010 season. And you and I met as part of our kickoff production before releasing kickoff and ranked every conference, which is one of the things we've done annually now, from 1 to 27. We don't rank the NESCAC because they don't play anybody else in Division III. They just play an insular schedule, and there's no real fair way to do it. And there's only 4 independents, so we don't rank the independents. But there are 27 others that we rank from 1 to 27. And Wisconsin Conference at the top, down to in August, we had the ECFC, the Eastern Collegiate Football Conference, at the bottom. And, you know, Keith, sometimes the pecking order between, you know, conferences in the and not the top, I think, because the WIAC has done pretty well for itself, but, you know, the second tier at the top and then this big vast middle, the difference between them is not very significant, but you know, some of the places where there are close encounters, I guess, so to speak, is for example, our number 5 and our number 6. 5 in August was the MIAC, the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, and 6 was the CCIW. And based on the way those conferences have performed so far, that might be flopping again.
Yeah, you know, we've had, I believe, CCIW as high as 3, possibly 4. You know, that's the, one of the conferences that's usually one of the elite conferences in Division III, and one of the reasons is because their teams fare so well in non-conference action. You know, so far this season, the CCIW teams are 19-2 combined. They've got 3-3-0 teams, Elmhurst, Illinois Wesleyan, Carthage, 3-2-0 teams. That's Millikan, North Central, and Wheaton. And then Augustana and North Park are both 2-1. And North Park, remember, is the team that hasn't beaten a CCIW opponent since the year 2000. And, you know, that's a team that's, you know, perfectly capable of going, you know, undefeated or 2-1 or in their non-conference schedule and then losing the rest of their games. So you, when you talk about the strength of that conference and what it takes, you know, just to get through, just to be competitive every week in that conference, the CCIW is right up there with some of the better ones that we talk about. And it's one of the, you know, fairly even ones, too, that's tends to be, you know, 6 strong teams deep, where you have some conferences that are very top-heavy and then have some not-so-good teams at the top, at the bottom, I'm sorry.
North Park went out and waxed McMurray. That's the one in Illinois, not the one in Texas. On Saturday by the score of 70-7. Now, McMurray was one of the teams that was in, I think, our bottom 5, certainly our bottom 10 in kickoff. But you know, there's a sense that says a W is a W. But there are other games, obviously, and there are a couple games that have yet to be played in the CCIW, one of which I'm looking forward to coming up this week, in fact, is North Central taking on Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And I'm interested in that not just because it's a battle of 2 ranked teams, but also because Eau Claire beat St. John's at home in overtime just last week, back in week 2. And it gives us a common opponent to kind of figure out the CCIW-MIAC matchup as well.
Sure. You know, we spend so much time talking about these conferences as a group. And sometimes there are these interesting interconference results where a good team from a fairly low-ranked conference can beat a bad team from a high-ranked conference or something else. But you get a situation where we're going to have a common opponent between generally the best team in the CCIW, you know, consistently the best team in the MIAC, or, you know, one of the best in St. John's, and then, you know, one of the top few teams in Wisconsin. That'll give us a great triangle to compare by, and, you know, one result doesn't represent the whole conference, but it certainly gives us something to work with when we talk about strength of entire conferences.
How about the Empire 8 so far? The conference has been very strong out of the gate, but there's not a whole lot of signature wins here so far, I would say.
Yeah, well, they're you know, Empire 8, 16-1. Everybody's undefeated. It's 4 undefeated teams at 3-0. Alfred's at 2-0, and Hartwick is the only team that has a loss. And maybe this is a case where you judge, since you don't have too many quote-unquote signature wins, you know, Ithaca beating Union maybe is the most definitive win so far in the season for the Empire 8. Maybe this is one of the cases where you judge the loss, and it gives you a little more information about where the Empire 8 as a whole stands. And that was Norwich that beat Hartwick here in week 3. And Norwich has certainly been hot, but also a team that struggled when it was part of the Empire 8.
Right, Norwich had gone through a fairly long losing streak in the Empire 8 before leaving to be a charter member of the ECFC. The conference schedule, or the non-conference schedule, I guess, for the Empire 8 does get a little more difficult as the weeks go on. Ithaca's playing at Lycoming this week. Utica's hosting Wilkes. Wilkes isn't a world beater out of the MAC, but a fairly decent team, a step up certainly from the ECFC and the NEFC, and then St. John Fisher hosting Hobart as well.
Yeah, and St. John Fisher is actually one of the teams I like out of the conference this year, but maybe the most impressive start so far actually belongs to Springfield. And, you know, they outscored their opponents 126-14 so far. You know, when they get that triple option offense going and when they're able to throw the ball out of it just enough to keep teams honest, they can certainly be dangerous. And then Utica this week, kind of a surprise victory, I thought, beating RPI and not just sort of lucking out to beat them, but beating them handily 42-21. It's certainly going to be an interesting race to watch this year. And Pat, as you alluded to, because there's only six teams in the conference this season, they're going to be playing non-conference games, you know, deeper into the season than most every other conference in the country.
You know, last week I asked about RPI barely hanging on to beat Endicott, with the thought that, yes, RPI is a little bit down this year, but I didn't really know what to make of Utica either. I thought Utica could beat RPI. I think you and I discussed specifically Utica versus RPI in kickoff, trying to decide who we should project to win that game. And it was, you know, we learned absolutely nothing from Utica waxing Becker 78-19 and Castleton State 59-22. This is the, I always say, the coming out party for Utica, because they beat Ithaca at one point in their in their young football lives as well. But this is a pretty big win for them.
Sure, and it's the type of momentum that they need to take and build on. Pat, you're right. You alluded to, you know, beating Becker 78-19, beating Castleton State 59-22. You know, those are both young programs, kind of in a sense where Utica was when they started up their program earlier this decade. And so those wins didn't tell us nearly as much as beating RPI by three touchdowns does. And for the Pioneers now, they're at home the next 3 weeks. This is the time for them to sort of make some noise and build that confidence within the program to be taken seriously. And the big game, I think, for them now becomes the October 2nd game against St. John Fisher. 7 o'clock kickoff, so it's under the lights, and if they can pull off a victory in that one, that's the one that really announces them to the rest of the Empire Eight. It says, hey, this win over RPI, which is usually a pretty strong team here upstate New York, that wasn't a fluke. So now they got to keep it going.
Ohio Athletic Conference, you know, maybe they slide just a little bit. I only say that because I'm not impressed with how John Carroll has come out of the gate. I thought they might give Case Western Reserve more of a game than they gave them. The Northwest Conference, you know, Linfield, I don't want to say drops the ball for the conference, but they lost to Cal Lutheran, a game that normally I think the Northwest Conference champs is expected to win. But then again, Pacific Lutheran picked right up for them and turned around on it.
Yeah, Pat, you talked too about there's movement, you know, between some of these middle tier, upper tier conferences every year, and a lot of that movement is decided on these early season non-conference matchups. And I think if you're looking for a big winner early in the season, it's probably the American Southwest, where you have Hardin-Simmons was able to go on the road and pick up a couple victories. Mary Hardin-Baylor went up to Wisconsin and had that comeback against La Crosse. That's the conference. You know, American Southwest has been as high as number three. You know, there was a period there for a couple of years where Mary Hardin-Baylor was the clear number three team, along with Mountain Union and Wisconsin Whitewater. And while that doesn't seem to be the case anymore, you have some of these AFC teams sort of coming up now. You know, Mississippi College won the conference last year. Hardin-Simmons looks strong so far this year. McMurray putting up all kinds of yardage, all kinds of points. And even there was an interconference upset, but fairly decent upset this week when Texas Lutheran beat East Texas Baptist, and East Texas Baptist had a win earlier in the season, a big non-conference win against a team from Wisconsin. So you have so much movement early in the season because there's so much interconference play. And I think if we're looking for an upward mover, you know, American Southwest certainly won. CCIW has done well in the early going, and the WIAC, you know, probably maintaining its number one spot because, as we talked about in last week's podcast, Pat, they play anyone under the sun. And, you know, there was a point last week where they were playing something like the, you know, they were number 5, 7, 9 teams in the country, and you know, it doesn't matter if it's the bottom team in the WIAC, they'll play pretty much anybody who will schedule them.
About that Texas Lutheran win over East Texas Baptist, that snapped a 14-game losing streak for Texas Lutheran. And yeah, if you play the beat the team who beat the team game, now you have a path by which Texas Lutheran can get itself into the middle tier of the WIAC. Some conferences that haven't performed as well as expected. I think we'd have to be disappointed with the way the Midwest Conference performed out of league. They were just 3-7, including the loss by Monmouth to Wartburg, which, you know, with Alex Tanney healthy, now is the only real game we saw out of the Monmouth lineup that we ranked them in the preseason expecting to see.
Yeah, I mean, you also never expect to look at the Midwest Conference and see St. Norbert and Monmouth, you know, hanging around the middle, lower, bottom half there. So that's certainly part of the reason why they had struggles out of conference, because the strong teams that you expect to win their non-conference games weren't able to do that, and they're struggling to start their season. And it makes you wonder where that champion of that league is going to end up getting placed in the playoffs. But you also start watching the two surprises. Now you have Ripon and Carroll at the top of that conference, and we could have some new teams in the playoffs if things shake out well for either of those two teams. Along the lines of disappointing starts, I think you have to put the Pac in that group, and they're 9-14 overall, 2-6 in the Pac-Mac Challenge, top conference, top team. Or second best team hadn't done so hot. That Washington Jefferson loss to Delaware Valley really sort of punctuated the Pac-Mac week. And but Thomas More, wasn't involved in that, and they're 2-0. A couple of strong victories early. Thomas More may be the torchbearer for the Pac when this is all said and done. And I think the other disappointing conference is the USA South, just 4-16 overall. And a lot of crossover play with the ODAC, and hadn't done so hot in it.
Yeah, and the USA South this weekend in particular, Keith, not just in the crossover play, but Ferrum losing to Southern Virginia, Christopher Newport lost to Frostburg State, Newport News Apprentice beat Greensboro. I mean, I don't think those are any of those three games that anybody would have really predicted.
No, certainly if you go back and look at our rankings from kickoff, we wouldn't have had Newport News Apprentice, being a team that upsets teams from the USA South very often. And I think when you look at this group of 0-3 teams nationally now, there are some teams you sort of expect to see in there that get off to a tough start. And sometimes even like for in the case of St. Lawrence, they seem like they've been playing better. They just haven't been able to get a victory. But you see Knox in that group. Olivet has had some tough seasons lately. Kings, Juniata, Fitchburg State, Anna Maria, Becker. None of those are really surprising. I think the real surprising name among that group of 0-3 teams so far nationally is Christopher Newport.
Yeah, Christopher Newport, the loss to Wesley, not unexpected. And maybe even the margin of defeat, 34-6, is maybe a little bit more than you might expect, but Wesley's done that to some decent teams before. But then, to lose to Salisbury 58-10, and to lose to Frostburg at all, to be honest with you, losing to Frostburg at all is not where Christopher Newport has been at any point in its history. This is a program that hit the ground, I think, better than it is right now. Its first year out of the gate, I don't think we would have expected them to lose to Frostburg State.
No, and Pat, you mentioned them hitting the ground, playoff team right away, and then for several years, more or less, I don't want to say dominating that league, because they there are some years where, a team would jump up and give them a challenge, whether it was Shenandoah or Averett or Ferrum, and Christopher Newport wasn't always the playoff team out of the USA South, but they were always right in the hunt there in the last week, and a 6-7-8 win team. There was a time not that long ago, Pat, where Christopher Newport hosted Mary Harden Baylor in early in the season and beat that team. You're talking about a perennial top five, top 10 team, and Christopher Newport belonged on the same field with them, and now we're talking about them being 0-3, not a contender in their conference. And the weird thing is, too, it doesn't seem – you can't identify where the change is. Same coach and staff, sort of same admissions principles as far as we can tell. I don't know exactly where the change has been, unless it's just other teams figuring out what they do or them growing stale or them just hitting a low cycle in recruiting.
How about Old Dominion starting football practically in Christopher Newport's backyard? Does that steal enough student athletes from Christopher Newport to affect this kind of change?
Yeah, Pat, that's a great point, actually. That probably does have a lot to do with it, because there was a time where Christopher Newport was the only program in the 757, as they would say, in that Tidewater Hampton Roads area of Virginia, and there were the schools that were winning in Virginia were going down there to get players. You know, Bridgewater recruited very heavily out of there, and I remember writing in Around the Nation one year how Bridgewater was more than willing to play one of its games at a neutral site in that Tidewater Hampton Roads area, because it would give them a showcase game to let kids from those high schools come and see Bridgewater play and get familiar with the name Bridgewater. So when you had Christopher Newport, you know, being a state school in Virginia and having cheaper tuition than a lot of the schools in the ODAC and in the USA South, and then on top of that, you know, having the playoff history right away, and then having that fertile recruiting ground in the backyard, that was sort of a recipe for success. And you're right, Old Dominion, when you have a 1AA team that's just starting its program, very often recruiting the same type of kids that end up playing in Division II and Division III. You know, we talk about the difference in scholarships sometimes, but not very different kids, a lot of them. You know, there's going to be more talented kids at an established 1AA program, where if you're talking about Richmond, you know, okay, that's not the same thing, but Old Dominion just getting started, those are going to be a lot of the same kids that Christopher Newport probably recruited. And it seems a little strange that it would seem to make sense. I mean, that they would hit a lull in recruiting, but it's a little strange when you look at, they had an All-American running back, you know, 2 years ago, and he played last year and just sort of didn't have his best season in Tunde Ogun. And you know, you still see the names from Christopher Newport. It just seemed like such a fast, precipitous drop for them. And certainly this season isn't over, but it's eye-opening.
I have heard, for what it's worth, that the admissions policy is a little more stringent at Christopher Newport these days. But these things are kind of hard to really quantify. And to be honest with you, if you've got a student body of, you know, 5,400 students, you could hide a couple of borderline admits and not skew your numbers in any meaningful way. So not to say that has anything to do with it, yes or no, but it is certainly something to think about. Moving on to other conferences, Keith, some of the conferences at the bottom, we've talked about these guys before, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on them today, but you know, some big wins in the early going for the UMAC, the Upper Midwest Athletic Conference, with Crown beating Carleton, and then the ECFC with SUNY Maritime winning against Western Connecticut, Norwich winning non-conference games. I think that you and I picked Norwich to not run the table, the opposite of running the table, to go winless out of conference, and they have pretty much done the opposite.
Yeah, and that's a team now that's rolling as well as anybody in the country. Finished last season with 8 consecutive wins, and then started off this season now 3-0. You know, we look over to that group of 3-0 teams, and there are a lot more 3-0 surprises than there were 0-3 surprises. You know, we talked about Christopher Newport, and I think maybe in that 0-3 group, maybe Concordia Wisconsin was the only other team that really stood out in that group. You look on the winners' side here, Norwich is certainly a surprise. SUNY Maritime, you mentioned, out of the ECFC as well. We talked about Utica. We talked about Crown. We talked about Springfield, actually, and the 4 3-0 teams in the Empire 8, and on down the list. You know, the surprise team so far in the Midwest with Carroll and Ripon. You know, Denison 3-0. That's surprising. Ursinus. Now we called that in kickoff. We had Ursinus predicted to be maybe the champion of the Centennial Conference, one of the top teams there. But to see them start off with big victory over Franklin and Marshall, and then Franklin Marshall turns around and beats Dickinson, sort of gives Ursinus a start, some legitimacy. And 3 teams in the Iowa Athletic Conference, the IAC, you know, the same 3 that we're always talking about, Central, Cohen, Wartburg, and then another surprise team, only off to a 2-0 start, is FDU Florham.
I want to talk about Husson for a second, and it was only 2 years ago that, you know, Husson fancied itself in the midst of the Pool B race, a playoff spot for the conferences and teams that are not in conferences that have automatic bids, their schedule wasn't anywhere near strong enough. This year, they upped the schedule like you wouldn't believe. They've played three top 40 teams here coming out of the gate, and they have gotten the doors blown off every time, and they've been outscored in those three games, 131-7, losing to Otterbein, Springfield, and Salisbury, all of those home games.
Yeah, and certainly none of those were easy road trips for especially for Otterbein coming from Ohio to go to Maine, Salisbury coming from Maryland up to Maine. You know, that in the future that can maybe be a little bit of a home field advantage, I guess, for Husson, because there's only a few other schools in Maine, and two of them, three of them actually aren't going to be able to have a non-conference game with you when we talk about Colby, Bates, and Bowden. So anybody that's got to come up to Maine, you know, that can be a big deal for Husson. Pat, you talked about the Pool B. When they were in the playoff hunt, they didn't have sort of the credentials schedule-wise. They upped that schedule this year, and then you find out, when you're still a young program, you find out what it takes exactly to compete week in and week out with teams from, you know, the OAC, from the Empire 8, and soon to be Empire 8 when we talk about Salisbury. You know, believe it or not, in this opening month of September for the Eagles, their easy game finally coming up, a trip to SUNY Maritime, and they're 3-0.
Yeah, and SUNY Maritime has done really well for themselves so far. Before we move ahead to what's coming up in week four, I wanted to take a minute just to answer some of the questions we've gotten. Since our redesign went out the door on Friday morning, we've gotten a couple of questions over and over. One, why did you change the scoreboard? And two, where can I find the message boards? And first of all, I just wanted to point out that, yes, there's a scoreboard on the front page, and that's for convenience. That's not to replace the scoreboard that we had before. It's to give someone an idea, just a quick glance at what's going on in the top 25, or if you want to look at what else is going on across Division III, there's a second tab with all the other games. But there is still the full-fledged scoreboard that we've had since 1999. The format hasn't changed a whole lot. If you click the scores button near the top of the page. And then the other question we get is, where's the message boards? There's a button underneath the rotating top stories that says message boards. That should be a fairly easy indication. You got to find that button, though. And then, of course, in the D3Sports.com network menu here, D3 boards is one of the options as well. In the past, we've had like three or four different links for post patterns because people just couldn't seem to find the message board. We've whittled it down to two because this is kind of what we have to do in order to clean up the site and not have links hanging out all over the place. But if you're looking for the message board, there's a button that says message boards that should be your first indication. Or if you go to D3Sports.com network, under the drop-down menu, D3 boards is one of your options. So I just wanted to throw that out there in case there are people listening to the podcast who can't figure out what's going on with the new design.
Well, if you found the podcast, that you've probably done pretty well for yourself with the new redesign. You know, to break it down into maybe the easiest way to explain it, we remodeled the house, but all the rooms are still the same. Everything's still here, pretty much under the same umbrella. And you know, it's new to us too, so we doing a little poking around and figuring out where things were. But everything is still here, as far as I can tell. You know, some things weren't where they were, and change is a little tough to get used to. But on the whole, this gives us a lot more flexibility with the front page. You know, you see now the four rotating moving stories. You know, we're able to put video out front now, and really keep the focus right there on whatever the top stories are. And I think it's going to take some getting used to, but I think in the long run we'll start to enjoy the new design. And Pat, you know, we've redesigned the site before. If you go back to the very first design with the green football field strip down the left-hand side, you know, we figured out where everything was when you changed that, and figure out everything where everything is with this new redesign too.
One of the things I like about this is that on game day, we won't have to make a decision as to which one game gets a photo at the top of the page. when you take 115 to 118, 120 games, try to figure out which is the only one that you can give that kind of special treatment to. Now we can do that to three or four games, and we did that this weekend with the game between the two top 10 teams, between Wesley and Delaware Valley, the game for the basically for the OAC runner-up position, more or less, between Ohio Northern and Otterbein, and then we were able to spotlight and have a whole separate roundup that is just games outside the top 25. And this is where Augsburg scored 5 touchdowns in the second half to rally past Hamlin. So we'll continue to do that sort of thing and, you know, keep, I don't want to say keep everybody happy, but maybe keep more people happy. There's more than one top story in any given week in Division III football, and now we're able to treat it like such. What's coming up in week four? As I mentioned at the top of the podcast now, going on about 45 minutes ago, the schedule doesn't quite compare to what's coming up in week five, but week four is still pretty good. And right at the top of the charts, Keith, there are two games between two top 10 teams. Hardin-Simmons facing Mary Hardin-Baylor, and Central facing Coe. These are unbeatens in the American Southwest, where it's number 5 and number 8, and then in the Iowa Conference, where it's number 7 and number 9, where we get a really good indication about where those conference races are going to go.
Absolutely. It doesn't get much more heated in Iowa than Central and Coe. You know, and we mentioned earlier, Wartburg seems like they're going to be hanging around that mix. So we're going to see between the Dutch and the Cohawks which one of those teams takes the early lead, so to speak. And then, I think just be even beyond the school, the ones that you mentioned, you know, Wesley, the number 3 team, playing a team just outside the top 25, or at least started the season in the top 25, isn't getting any votes anymore. But Wesley going to Capital, you know, that's a pretty good sort of random non-conference game here in week 4. And same deal with North Central and Wisconsin Eau Claire. You know, if Wisconsin Eau Claire couldn't have picked up many better teams to start off their season. Bethel, Tennessee, obviously an NAIA team, and that doesn't tell us a whole lot. But St. John's, and then North Central, and then jumping right into that WIAC schedule with Stevens Point in Platteville, which is 2-1 right now. So for them, it's great, and we love to see these non-conference clashes. You know, North Central certainly needs the test after the way they've started the season. You know, they didn't blame Cornell and Olivet. I don't think was quite their level.
No, they'll have a significant jump in opponent when they host Wisconsin Eau Claire on Saturday. The 11th ranked Cardinals hosting the 17th ranked Blue Golds. You mentioned Wesley Capital. That's a game, of course, that Baldwin Wallace had to agree to adjust its conference schedule in order to allow Capital to play Wesley. Their non-conference games in the OAC have always been week 1 and week 2 ever since the conference has been 10 teams, or at least in our recent memory. And this game's taking place in week 4. We've got in the pack, we've got 12th-ranked Thomas More hosting W&J. This has been a battle the last couple of years. Keith, do we think that it's going to continue to be a battle, considering how W&J's looked down the stretch last year at the beginning of the season this year?
Well, I mean, I think if that program's gotten any pride, it's certainly got to bounce back from the Del Valle game. And, you know, this is maybe the last chance for the rest of the season to get that national spotlight on them. And Thomas More has sort of become their nemesis now, or at least their top challenger in the President's Athletic Conference. And when you get, you know, when you're a junior, senior in a program, and it's that same team that keeps beating you, or keeps bugging you, or keeps pushing you your hardest every year, you start to look forward to that game. And I don't think, if I was a player on Washington Jefferson, I'd be real excited about a chance to play Thomas More.
Also coming up this week, Wittenberg is at Allegheny. Alfred plays Springfield as we get the first of the Empire 8 matchups. Hampton-Sydney plays Salisbury, and the NESCAC gets underway.
Yeah, welcome to the party, NESCAC. Always starting a little late, but that doesn't mean they're any better or worse. They just that's the way they like to do it, and they'll get off to an interesting start this week and next. You always see that Trinity Williams game is very early in the season, and that's usually a good one. And so we'll be glad to have those 10 teams join the fray.
He's Keith McMillan. I'm Pat Coleman. Don't forget to stick around as I, you know, now that we have four rotating leads, I've drawn this map up and I have it posted on my desk just to remind myself of what needs to be done every day. We've got Statistical Spotlight coming up. You're listening to the Around the Nation podcast right now. Reminder to teams, coaches, SIDs, even fans with video cameras in the stands, send us your nominations for Play of the Week by the end of the night on Monday night in order to be considered, because that we publish on Tuesday. We have Around the Region, Around the Nation, and then we're back in with game coverage on Friday and Saturday.